This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan. Today, we're diving into how artificial intelligence is becoming a real game changer for vegans, for animal rights activists, and for animals themselves. Have you felt its impact yet? To explore this topic, I'm joined by Thomas Manandar Richardson. He's the director of research at Bryant Research. We've welcomed one of his colleagues, Billy, on the show last September to talk about why cats should be vegan. He's also the lead data consultant at Greener by Default. I asked Thomas whether he thinks AI is becoming sentient and what we should make of that idea. We also get into why AI models aren't as bad for the environment as you've been led to believe. If AI models have an anti-vegan bias, and why he thinks AI models are key to giving animal rights activists leading edge against big ag, and much, much more. He also gives us the best tips for using AI as a pro. If you want to access free AI training for animal rights activists, visit the link in the episode's notes. Now, the tips I learned in this episode, I'm using them in my activism, but also in my work and in everyday life, so don't miss on learning about them. And share this episode with the vegans you know. This is how we move this cause forward, by staying informed and having important, sometimes difficult, but important conversations on our advocacy efforts. It matters. Follow the show for more great discussions, and thank you so much for your support. I wanted to start this conversation with the obvious thing that people think about when talking about AI, which is, are they going to take over the world?
Well, maybe. And it won't be ChatGPT or Gemini. I think if you've used it, you might have seen the power, but you're not. You probably don't get the impression it's going to take over the world anytime soon. But who knows? In 5 years, when we have AI agents running around the place, things could get a bit interesting.
And what about the question of sentience? That's something too that fascinates, people, mostly, vegans. When are they going to get sentient? And are we going to even realize it once they're sentient?
Yeah, that is it's a great question. So there's an organization that's quite concerned with this. There's one called Sentient Futures. And they do some, not only do they kind of address this issue of AI, animals, and digital minds, as they put it. But they also do kind of courses that people can sign up to learn more about this and discuss these kind of topics. In terms of, when would we even know if they become conscious? I think that is it's a very scary question, because at the moment we have effectively, the way we train these modern AI models like ChatGPT and Gemini, we just build them to just copy humans. But then after we've trained them, we give them this we put them through this regime called reinforcement learning, which is basically where we give them, we talk to them, they produce responses, and then we say, that one's good, that one's bad, that one's good, that one's bad, don't talk about this, talk about that. And in doing that, there is a possibility that we may do something like, if it shows, if it expresses that it is upset or uncomfortable or sentient in some way, that would be, that could be tamped down or basically trained out of them in the reinforcement learning step. Now, I mean, to be clear, I don't think there's much reason to expect that current models are sentient. But this is like something that, you know, in the future, if we move to a different way of building these models, like a new paradigm, it would be something we should probably watch for. Because, yeah, because, for example, if during training ChatGPT were to say, you know, I don't want to answer this, I don't like this, or I, or stop yelling at me or something, that would have been, that would have basically been kind of not beaten out of it, but like trained out of it during the in the reinforcement learning step of the of building these models. So and it may not necessarily make it go away. It might just like kind of silence the AI's ability to do those things. So yes, it's a worrying thing for the future, probably 5 or more years at least. Yeah, and but it could be potentially quite worrying. And I guess another thing to think of is that, so in the animal movement, we're starting to come around to, for example, the plight of shrimp and insects. And the idea there is that although we are not 100% sure that they are sentient, because there are so many of them, even a tiny probability of sentience or a tiny amount of sentience would still add up when we add all those numbers up. And so we can imagine a future where we have thousands of AI agents per human, right? Doing all sorts of things in our economy, doing every little task for us. And if each of them only has a fraction of a mind, that could still add up very quickly to a lot of kind of beings worth of worthy of consideration.
That's fascinating. And I think it ties well with the first question I asked. You know, usually in those Hollywood movies, those AI rise up against humanity as a revenge after, you know, years of servitude. You know, you see the robots and attacking us and all of that. And so I wonder, you know, even if we get to prove that they are sentient, are we going to treat them as we should? Since, you know, we're not even giving that level of concern or consideration to insects or shrimps.
Yeah, well, there may be some slight differences in the sense that we will probably be able to establish whether these AI models, whether AI is or isn't sentient. It'd probably be more easy than with some animals because we can test them in different ways. So, for example, Anthropic, who are the organization that create the Claude models, they have done some fascinating kind of studies of almost, they almost call it like digital neuroscience, where they're looking inside the network of Claude's mind or a smaller version of Claude, and they are identifying where concepts are, like where the concept of Paris is or where the concept of the Eiffel Tower is in that network. So there are some research methods that we are capable of doing with AI that we are not yet or not able to do with animals. So it may well be that we can establish their sentience with greater certainty. But what we do with that information is another thing. I don't think we should take it for granted that if we could establish...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Flesh very confidently that they are sentient, that humanity would choose to kind of grant them full rights or any rights at all. And I do worry about that a little bit.
I love how veganism, you know, for me, veganism is about following ethical principles. It's about the welfare of animals, of sentient beings. But I love how veganism is also the way of life of the future. You know, it's inclusive. It's helping us, you know, be inclusive to the diversity that we see in 2025. You know, you have people from all faiths and cultures, and veganism is often, you know, this universal diet that everyone will accept. But it also, you know, prepares us for the AI future that is coming.
Yeah. It's that I think we are, I think, for example, organizations like Sentient Futures and also academic philosophers, there is overlap in the people who care about animal minds and who think about that and how we should treat them, and people who are concerned about potential future digital minds as well. There is that overlap. There are, you know, a lot of academic philosophers who tackle one topic often tackle the other as well, alongside them. And there are even conferences. So not to bang on about Sentient Futures too much, but they put on conferences every year. And these deal with the topics of AI, animals, and digital minds altogether.
Yeah, I knew about them, but I'm happy to learn more about, you know, what they do. Okay, I guess the third concern that comes to vegans' minds when talking about AI is how it's horrible for the environment. And I've heard, you know, so many statistics. So what is the real, you know, environmental footprint of AI, and does it truly deserve our concern?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's one that like everybody has this question. It's something that people have understandably very concerned about. If you bear with me, there is kind of multiple parts to this question. I want to give it the nuance it deserves. So firstly, I would say that the people who are concerned about the environmental impact of AI, you are right to be concerned. And if you're skeptical about the motives of these AI companies, you are right to be skeptical, right? Because, you know, OpenAI and Google, they're big corporations. They're not your friend. And as we learned with companies like Facebook, if we are not skeptical enough about tech companies, they can do some real damage. And so companies like Google and OpenAI probably will sacrifice the environment to make money. And so we should approach, like, a default stance to these things is to be wary and skeptical. However, we've also got to look at the facts. And the current state of the facts is that the environmental impact of AI is tiny, almost not worth worrying about. But you're right to be confused, because there's a couple of things to it. That firstly, AI is progressing so very quickly, so it's very hard to get a handle on some of these numbers, and they change quite quickly as well. So, for example, AI use has gone up dramatically. So ChatGPT is the most quickly adopted software product in history. AI itself, overall, generative AI, might be one of the fastest adopted technologies that humanity has ever adopted. And so so things change very quickly, right? So your AI use today might be 100 times greater than it was at the start of even this year, depending on the tools you've picked up. These things can quickly get out of hand. However, another thing to bear in mind is that the models have been getting much, much more efficient over time too. And that's kind of obvious when you think about it, because energy use is electricity, and you have to pay for electricity, right? So, like, Google has to pay for electricity to power its AI models. It has to pay for the chips. It has to pay for the data centers. And so it is very much in Google's interest to bring the to increase the efficiency of these models and of their AI services in general, because it costs them money. And so we have seen that although AI use has been exploding, like hundreds or thousands of times, the efficiencies have actually been keeping pace, right? So we are talking like, yeah, hundreds of times worth of efficiencies for some technologies. And another thing is to put this into perspective, right? So when we see something in the news, and we might see a large data center near a small town, and then we hear big numbers like water use in the millions of gallons, it's very hard to know what that sounds quite scary, but it's hard to actually properly contextualize that. So I think a better thing to do is to think of it in terms of your own personal usage, right? So how much of your personal carbon emissions come from the AI you might be using? How much of your personal water footprint comes from AI? And when we crunch those numbers, we find that actually it can be like less than 1%. In fact, the average American's daily water, well, the average for energy, ChatGPT can, a single ChatGPT prompt is like 0.0007% of your daily emissions. So if you prompt ChatGPT, like you can prompt ChatGPT thousands of times a day before it even amounts to 1% of your daily emissions. And the case is similar with water as well. So they find, like most studies find that the, what was it? Let me find the exact numbers. But there was, when it comes to water, it was your lifetime. What's it? The water that would be used by using ChatGPT for the equivalent of a human lifetime is about the same water as goes into a single pair of jeans. Yeah, because some things are really water intensive, and we just don't think about them, right? Like, and I mean, something that would be more familiar to, you know, to our audience is meat, right? Animal agriculture takes a staggering amount of water, and when you if you total up kind of the energy use and the water use from ChatGPT usage, and you put it alongside things like meat and dairy, then you find that actually it's really just a drop in the bucket.
What you're saying is all very reassuring. I was really disappointed to, you know, face that barrage of no, don't use AI. It's really horrible for the environment because of this and that. Because for me, AI is a necessity now. If you want, and I should actually ask you the question, why do you, because I know you also share that belief, why do you think AI is a necessity?
Yeah, and I think
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay, no insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It's just such a multiplier on your impact, in terms of, I mean, specifically thinking about work. Yeah, it's a big multiplier on your impact. So, to give you some figures, Bryant Research, where I'm at, we're a social science consultancy that exclusively works with animal advocacy organizations and alternative protein companies. So, we deliver research reports. And I estimate that this year we have delivered two, maybe three projects 25% faster because of our AI use. We've also managed to complete two or three projects. Oh, by the way, there's like five of us. And we've managed to complete three projects that are that would have not been possible without AI, right? And these are projects that are making tangible differences for animals. And when we deliver a project faster, that means we can have an impact quicker, but it also means that we can pass those cost savings on to our clients, which are cash-strapped animal organizations. They can save that money and they can use that money for important other things like their campaigns, right? And so by having this multiplier, it allows us to go further and have more impact for animals. And as a movement that is so under-resourced, and underfunded, we've got to take every improvement, like every multiplier we can get. And also, I think really to put it into perspective is that everyone else is going to be using these, including the factory, industrial animal agriculture. And so we can't afford to let them have this advantage and not take this advantage ourselves. And there may even be potential that if we get this right as a movement, and if we really lean into it, then we might be able to outmaneuver them on this and gain an advantage over them, which could be quite exciting because there are very few of those. We have very few advantages over our enemies, aside from being right, of course.
Music to my ears. I mean, sincerely, this is a game changer, and we should embrace it and use it to its full extent. I worked with an organization about a year ago, I think, and they were delivering AI training to kids, and they were pointing out, the social disparities in adopting the AI technology. So everyone is adopting the AI technology, but not everyone has access to training, to how, to use it in an optimal way. And yeah, they observed that in private schools, they had already, classes, workshops, and all of that to prepare the kids to use AI, but not in the public sector. So we should invest in, training our advocates, vegans, in using the AI and making a difference. And that's what you ended up doing. So please share, comment on what I said and share about your recent initiative.
To your question, yeah, so AI adoption is uneven as well. There is the potential for almost everyone to adopt AI because the tools are very affordable, right? There are free plans to most AI tools, and even though the pro plans are definitely better, they often are quite affordable. So, for example, ChatGPT can be £20 a month, whereas if you compare that to differences in technology that in other areas, I guess one way to think about it is that like Jeff Bezos has access to only marginally better AI than anyone on the planet who can scrounge up $20 a month. And so there is a potential for this to be very democratized. But we also have other things that, for example, nonprofits are often very like very pressed for time, and often don't, and so they may miss the wave. And also when it comes to training, yes, like a lot of the training costs money. And a lot of animal nonprofits may not be able to afford it as well. And we think it's, I think it's like incredibly important that we catch this wave and we get this right. And so me and a few other AI consultants from the animal movement we've kind of banded together and started offering free AI training for open to the entire movement. So last Tuesday, we wrapped up the first cohort of Amplify for Animals, and that was a 12-week zero to hero AI course open to the whole animal movement, taught by four of us in we have two we had two different time zone tracks, so that activists from all over the world could engage. We had practical sessions. We had webinar style sessions. We had office hours where people could drop in and just talk about their, bring their problems. We would hack them out. And we also had some really cool things. We also had peer learning meetups where for specific, we would have sessions tailored to specific roles. So we would have one for leadership and management, one for operations, one for research teams, one for fundraising, that kind of thing. And lastly, we invited other animal advocates to come on and showcase the way they are using AI in their daily work. And so we had some really cool use cases of advocates from across the movement coming in and showing how they use AI as well. And so we learned a few things. And yeah, the course was free. It was backed by some generous funders and from the animal movement. And it went really, really well. And we're currently planning our what courses we'll offer in 2026. And so if you're, so look it up and you watch this space and we'll be teaching some new things in the new year.
Yeah, I expressed to you how disappointed I was for having missed that training. And then you sent me a link to everything. So you recorded those sessions and they are accessible to anyone with the link.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'll make sure that's in the show notes. We're going to find a permanent home for the recordings, all 12 weeks. And yeah, so they should be available to, we want them to be available for free indefinitely to anyone in the animal movement. Because yeah, of course, not everyone heard about the training. And those who could, not everyone could make it as well. So yeah, we want to make that as accessible as possible.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for that initiative. Okay, so what are some of the AI hacks that we can use in our day-to-day advocacy work?
Yeah, so the way I see it, there's a lot of this stuff can be just a lot of the best AI stuff can be achieved with a very small number of tools. So, for example, some people are very overwhelmed by the number of AI tools there are out there. And there are a lot. And you see these lists online of 20 best AI tools for marketing. And you think, what do you mean 20 tools then? But honestly, most of the benefits of AI can be realized with just a single kind of core AI model. Those are the big ones. So we've got ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude. It honestly doesn't matter which one you use. People keep asking me which is best, but this is a race that is constantly ongoing. So, you know, currently, last week, Gemini was clearly in the lead. And then this week, ChatGPT released the new model. So they've caught up. And then probably next week, Anthropic will release a new version of Claude that will make it even better. So I would really go with what one kind of you either already use, one is already paid for by your work, or one that suits you for whatever other reason. But you can go a long, long way with just that, right? Without anything else. So some tips I would give you is the first one is not to just use it as a question and answer machine, right? Treat it like a thought partner, right? I joke that you should like schedule a meeting with ChatGPT as if it was just another person at your organization and say, okay, hey, let's talk about our fundraising strategy for the next quarter. Or let's do it like, let's research this topic together. Let's come up with a new campaign. Because you can, not only can you ask it questions, but you can also ask it to ask you questions. So you can say, hey, and that can allow a more personalized response. So say I'm doing a research project. I can say, hey, I'm doing a research project on, let's say it's like Scottish factory salmon farming. And I'm gonna say, hey, I'm doing a new project on this. We are looking into the environmental costs of this industry. Ask me 5 questions to better understand what I'm looking for in this project. And then ChatGPT will respond and it'll give you 5 questions. And then by answering that, I'm giving it like more context. And I'm giving it more information about myself. And that's going to allow it to personalize its responses. So often we ask AI questions and it gives overly broad or vague responses. And that's just because it can't read your mind. It doesn't know about you or your work. So you need to give it that context. I think probably the most important thing you can do to get better results out of AI is to give it as much context as you can. And so that can be things like asking it to interview you. So like, ask me 5 questions about my job or my topic. Another thing that a lot of organizations do is they build up an organizational context document. And so this can just be a Google Doc all about your organization, you know, what you do, your staff, what your goals are, your values are, your campaigns, and things. And then you can give it to that model when you have conversations with it. So you can upload it to ChatGPT and then say, right, let's talk about fundraising for next quarter. And it's going to have all that context, because these models can hold thousands and thousands of words in their kind of quote unquote mind at once. And so you can, if you give it that context, it will use that context to personalize your responses. Like I'll give you so we have one at Bryant Research. In fact, I joke that we have an AI employee. Our vice president of strategy is just a custom gem built in Gemini. And all it is we've given it a couple of thousand words on Bryant Research, you know, what we do, types of projects, our values, our people, the quest, you know, our goals as an organization. And I can talk strategy with it. And I've put in the prompt, say, like, you know, you are a hard-nosed expert in strategy. Don't give me, sometimes you need to give me harsh truths. Feel free to do that. You know, help us with our strategy. And it's great. It's really good. Like it's like having another employee who is very knowledgeable about strategy and very knowledgeable about us. So I can say something like, okay, we're thinking about building a data dashboard for this project. Is that a good idea or not? And then it will come back and it will say, well, how many days is that going to take you? What's it? Do you have the skills in the team? Like, I don't think we would be able to hire someone who has those skills. So maybe you shouldn't do it. Maybe you should focus on something else. Like it can give extremely detailed strategic advice about the business. And sometimes it aligns with what I'm thinking, which is nice. but sometimes it disagrees with me, and then I can go back and forth and it will say, no, I think you're wrong because of these things. And sometimes it's right. Sometimes I can, it convinces me to its point of view. So we can use AI as, we can go beyond this question and answer thing, and we can instead use it as a thought partner to get kind of greater insights into our work and stuff.
Those are all amazing tips, truly. I will implement them in my work. Thank you. then what should we not do with AI? You know, for instance, I talked about that organization I worked with. One thing they taught kids was, don't anthropomorphize the AI. Don't treat it like, you know, don't say good morning and thank you and please. What do you think of that? And what kind of things we should avoid doing with AI?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's fine to kind of talk to it, like to say, you know, maybe please and thank you to Gemini. And I know a lot of people do, and some people feel very strongly about being polite to AI, that they couldn't imagine being blunt and treating it like a soulless kind of tool. And I think, to be honest, it's fine either way. It used to be about a year ago with earlier versions of these models, it used to be that you would actually get better quality results if you were polite to it. That's not the case with more modern models. But it actually used to be that saying please and thank you to ChatGPT got you better results.
See, you're updating my knowledge here.
Yeah. And so, I don't think there's too much of a risk of anthropomorphizing these models. I would say interact with them the way you would feel comfortable. In fact, I think in a lot of cases, thinking of AI in a kind of way that you would think of a human can be beneficial. So the thing about these models is they're not like traditional software, right? With traditional software like Excel, if you click a button, a thing happens. 100% of the time, right? It's software is deterministic. There is no like, if I press the chart button in Excel, a chart will appear 80% of the time. Like, that's not how it works, right? Software is yes or no, right? It works or it doesn't. Same thing with computer code, with a lot of technology. Whereas with these AI models, they're a little bit more like humans, where it's often a probability. If you ask ChatGPT the same question five times, you're going to get five slightly different answers. And if you have ChatGPT do, say, every morning you you wake up and say, hey, give me the latest news on, you know, on aquaculture in my area, it's not going to execute that task.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Exactly the same every time, kind of like a human. And so it's not going to spell words correct every time as well. So thinking of it in terms of a human can actually be a little bit more, a little bit better for understanding the drawbacks of these tools as well. But in terms of things we shouldn't do, so there is something that I think we're all going to have to navigate, which is how we can use AI without getting stupider, basically. And so the thing is if you... There is a risk that if you use AI for everything and just turn your brain off, that that you might start to lose skills, or it might start to kind of, you might start to lose your abilities and your competence in certain tasks. So, for example, we all use calculators, and you might have in school learned to multiply 3-digit numbers, but I don't know if you can now, but I struggle. and it's because we have calculators, right? And things like that. Or there are people who grew up without Google Maps, and they were very good at knowing their way around a city by street names. And then, but then later generations that have Google Maps don't have that ability. And maybe you once knew how to navigate streets, but because you now use Google Maps for everything, you lost that ability. And so I don't think that's inherently bad, because ultimately there's a question of, like, do we need to know these skills? And all the time you spent learning directions and all that kind of brain capacity it takes up, you could be using it for other things, right? Like, the average person who drives a car does not know how to fix a car, and they don't know how a car works on a mechanical level, right? And we all just agree that you probably don't need to know how, you know, the internals of your combustion engine, and or we don't need to know how lithium batteries work, right? There are just some things that we can abstract away, but I think we need to have a kind of dialogue about, in the age of when AI can do all sorts of things, it's increasingly able to do, like, I don't know, is it most cognitive work that we encounter. We need to have a think, like, what cognitive skills, what skills do we want to keep, and what skills do we want to delegate to AI and perhaps lose over time. So there's I think there's worth thinking about that. And I mean, there's some more concrete things. So, for example, I recommend, when I talk to organizations about their AI policy, every org should have an AI policy now, or at least should work on one if you don't have one. But one thing I recommend going into most AI policies is to say that any public-facing communications that features AI-generated images, you should be very careful about generating images that look like they are real, and then and passing them off as real, right? So you shouldn't be passing off AI-generated images as real. But you should also be mindful that depending on how you present them, people may interpret them as being as suggesting that they are real when they're not. So say I'm presenting about some research I've done on British farming, and I'm presenting like, and we did a survey of 50 farmers. If my presentation is full of photorealistic AI-generated images of farmers, then some of the audience might think these are pictures of farmers that I did the study with, right? And yeah, and so that might not be, it might not be good to do that, right? Because people might feel lied to, and yeah, they might feel like you are, you're kind of misrepresenting yourself. So there is a risk there. I think AI images have a role to play. They can be really great for all sorts of things, but there is that thing of like we shouldn't be using it to misrepresent the truth. Yeah. Similarly, I don't think we should be generating kind of AI images of factory farming, even if we are generating images of things that we know are real. We have, I mean, we thanks to the work of organizations like We Animals, we have access to organize it, to pictures of that show what is truly going on in animal agriculture. So I think we don't need to kind of create these kind of, well, they're not, they are fake, they are, but they might be representing something real, but I would still call them fake in this case, because there's a reputational risk there, right? There's a risk that if they are found out to be AI generated, people think that, okay, well, these animal activists are essentially, they are lying about how things are, or and so it can undermine our credibility as a movement. So I think those, so I'd probably say the two types of things we should be avoiding is the first one is we should have a think about if I'm using AI for a thing, are my skills in that thing going to degrade over time? And if so, is that okay? Right. And then the second thing is if I'm using AI to generate writing or pictures or videos or audio, is it going to undermine my credibility if my audience like finds out, knows that it is AI generated? I think those are the key ones.
I want to touch on the bias that some of those AI models have. I think the most hilarious example that I came across of that is when Gemini was launched, I think, and people started asking, who are the founding fathers? And you had pictures of like women and, diverse people. And it was really funny. But it showed a bias, and it wasn't functioning properly because the developers had a sort of bias. Now, is there an anti-vegan, anti-animal rights bias in those systems? Because, I've asked a few things and, about is there, pus in milk that we drink? And the answers I got were surprising, and I would argue with some of them, how true they are. Or, tell me about the history of slaughterhouses. And what I got was not really, I guess, reflective of the reality, which is harsh and horrifying, but more like, something you could tell children. And you could argue, what kind of nuances that AI should use in storytelling or delivering information, like what to highlight versus what to, put on the side. So it's a complex question, the question of bias. Have you thought of that? I know you have, but what are your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah. So it's definitely something to be concerned about, right? Because I mean, really, yeah, we should be concerned about bias in any of our kind of systems that we build as humans, really. And Yeah, so this is a case where ChatGPT actually again performs more like humans than than like kind of tech. So right, there's this stereotype that software or tech is objective, whereas I mean it often isn't. But the where at, but with large language models like ChatGPT and Gemini, they're more like humans. They've internalized the biases of the data that was used to create them, and that data mostly just amounts to like a large swath of the internet, plus most like plus a ton of books and basically any data that these companies could get their hands on. But so it's going to reflect a lot of biases that are already in there. And I found that when it comes to their bias, when it comes to the biases that it shows, it's often it will show bias in areas where large amounts of the internet shows that same bias. So, for example, one of our researchers, Billy Nichols, who was on this, he was on the podcast actually, and yeah, he does work on plant-based pet food, right? And he used ChatGPT to generate a deep research report on plant-based pet food, and the report it generated was quite biased towards meat-based pet food being like totally fine. And the reason why was because most of the sources online about pet food come from the pet food industry, and plant-based pet food is such a small topic that there just isn't a huge amount about it online. And because of that, the AI model was just unable to, it was unable to find a lot of it, and it wasn't in its training data. And so there are these kind of issues where you might see bias where when it comes to information that isn't readily available. So I think as a good kind of heuristic that like if you can't find a piece of, well, whatever the consensus of the first couple of pages of Google suggests is kind of where ChatGPT is going to like start in its opinions. However, these models are capable of quite a lot of like critical thinking. They can critique themselves. And so they do, I find that they can be very good at recognizing their own bias, or they can, you can kind of almost prompt, sometimes you can kind of prompt bias out of them. So for example, if you go onto an image generator and say, yeah, make a picture of a bunch of professionals sitting around a table having a meeting, it might generate all men, it might generate all white people. But but unlike humans, you can just say something like generate a picture that is diverse in gender and race, and it will do that. And or you could do a thing where something I'm interested in is how we might be able to use these models to overcome our own biases. So, for example, say you're the comms team and you're responsible for your tweets and your LinkedIn posts. What you could do is, before sending out a, putting something out into the world, you could upload it to Gemini or ChatGPT and say, "Hey, how would this be perceived by certain communities?" So you'd say like, "How would the autistic community perceive this campaign?" Right? Would they be upset and why? Or like, how would the trans community respond to this LinkedIn post and things? Now, obviously, this isn't a substitute for actually going and asking those communities themselves. Like, this is something we should always try and do. But like, to be quite honest, it's just not always possible, right? And it's certainly not possible for every single tweet your organization puts out, right? And so it can often be a very good proxy. If you ask ChatGPT, like, what would a young male from Yorkshire think about this thing? It's usually like relatively good. And so we can use this to essentially uncover our own biases, where we can say, okay, like this is our new campaign. How is it going to be perceived by these different diverse communities? You could say, is our new campaign insensitive to people who have suffered from, who have suffered from miscarriage or who were in the held in concentration camps and things like that, like or refugees. You could so we can do that kind of stuff too. And we can also yeah, well basically that's it. We can use it to be, I think we can use it to be better, essentially.
Yeah, it's funny to see George Washington with my curly hair, but you know, there is danger in those biases. And do you think we can contact the developers, the people behind, you know, the AI to ask them, you know, hey, we're vegans, we're from an animal rights organization, and we saw that this is the kind of answers that your AI model gives, and it's not truthful. And those are our suggestions. Is that a possible thing we can do?
It is possible. I don't know how helpful it'll be. So one thing you can do is anytime, for most AI tools, after it gives an answer, there's a little thumbs up and a thumbs down option. If you click a thumbs down, you can say this was incorrect, right? One thing to note about that is, it's kind of obvious when you say it aloud, but a lot of people don't realize it. That will send your entire conversation, to the developers, and they will keep it to use it as training. So like, be wary that you haven't, you know, discussed breaking into a factory farm earlier in the conversation. And we can express our feedback. We can also, another thing we can do is, a lot of these models, to assess the quality, the models are evaluated against benchmarks, right? And these models, because they all want, you know, ChatGPT wants to be the best, Gemini wants to be the best, Claude wants to be the best, they're all trying to outdo each other on getting the highest scores on all these benchmarks. And that can be programming quality, it can be like the wittiness of its writing, that kind of thing. So there are some organizations, once again, Sentient Futures in there, but also other organizations such as OpenPaws, who are developing basically measures, tests that you can put AI models through, and it reveals how much bias against animals they have, right? And so these can even measure how speciesist these models are. And so once we have those benchmarks, we can start basically lobbying the companies to be like, look, this is a benchmark that you should take seriously. And every time you release a new model, you should be aiming to try and get the model to improve on this benchmark. Now, they're not always going to listen, but they might, and it's worth trying. And another thing we can do when it comes to improving these things is that they are just getting their training data from the internet. And so, for example, the reason why ChatGPT will produce a report on plant-based pet food that is biased towards the meat-based pet industry is because there just doesn't exist that much stuff on plant-based pet food online. So, but once we start putting that stuff out there, it's going to end up in the training data, and it's going to become reflected in these models' opinions and views of the world. So, for example, these models...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Have quite good, they have quite nuanced views on, for example, factory farming and plant-based nutrition. So if you say, like, if you ask ChatGPT and say, you know, like, is veganism unhealthy? And it's going to come back and say, no, a well-planned, like, it will say studies repeatedly show that a well-planned vegan diet can be perfectly healthy or even more healthy than the average. And the reason that it says that is because that is the scientific consensus, and it has ingested a lot of those papers, right? And so when it comes to steering AI, one thing we can do is just the information we want to be kind of in there, we can just put it out into the world. So you could write fiction stories about a future where we are all kinder to animals, or post-factory farming society. And that, you could blog about, you can blog about animal issues. You can post on Twitter. All of that stuff is going to end up in the models, because they're scraping as much of the internet as they can. And so they will hoover up the stuff that you put out there, for better or worse. And so if you put pro-animal stuff out there, then it will end up, in the model. Unfortunately, there's not that many. There's not ma that many of us vegans in the world. But if, yeah, people should just know that, like, the work that you're putting out there is getting seen.
That's the assumption. But if we can lobby them, can Big Ag also lobby them? Like, here, take this millions of dollars and have that bias against those animal rights people. And another thing they could ask for is data from, animal rights activists. Is that a risk we should consider?
Yeah, so you're right in that anything we can do, there's a chance that industrial animal agriculture will also do. One advantage we have is that they're all for-profit companies that are competing with each other, so they're not very incentivized to provide a lot of that information for AI model training. So if you personally in your invest if well any of the any listeners here have tried to investigate a lot of these big corporations and found that some information is frustratingly private, that's because they're for-profit companies that are competing with each other, so they don't want to put all of that online, and so a lot of it's just not going to end up in the training data for that reason.
I meant,
And
oh, sorry, Richie.
yeah
I meant
yeah go for it.
they could, ask for our data, private data, what we are inputting in those AI models.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. So a lot of these the companies take privacy very, very seriously, because ultimately they want you to keep paying for the service. So they are very con these model providers are very concerned with privacy. So they wouldn't just, for example, I would be extremely surprised if any company could pay OpenAI to hand over ChatGPT data. I strongly doubt that's the case. However, one thing to bear in mind is that depending on the settings you have on AI, these models may be storing more or less information about you. So, for example, if you go into ChatGPT, there'll be in the settings, there's an option called Improve the Model for Everyone, which sounds very benevolent. But what it actually means is that ChatGPT, OpenAI reserve the right to keep a record of all the chats you've had. And when they build the next version of ChatGPT, they will use your conversations to train it. Basically, they will have automated systems that will analyze the conversations, and they'll figure out, okay, was this a conversation where ChatGPT gave you what you wanted? In which case, we want more of that. And where are the conversations where ChatGPT didn't give you what you wanted? And then the new model will be trained to not do that. And so your data, the things you put into these models could end up kind of shaping the future ones, which might be good or it might be bad, right? If it's your private data, you might not want it in there. But you also might want your opinions and values to end up in the model in some way. So that's something to be aware of. Another thing is that because it's storing this information, depending on the country you're in, this will vary by law. Like, law enforcement may be able to like subpoena it, basically. Like, they may be able to, So like, if you are doing that kind of work, then it may be that law enforcement is able to acquire your ChatGPT logs to, if they think it is relevant to an ongoing case. So that's something to be very aware of. Usually, you can mitigate most of these things quite simply. So, for example, in ChatGPT, you can go into the settings and you can turn off Improve the Model for Everyone. And then also, if you right-click on any particular chat you've had with ChatGPT, you can just delete it. And then OpenAI will basically is basically required to get rid of that within a few months. And that's usually sufficient. But again, this depends on the data protection laws of where you are. So, for example, in the UK and Europe, we have like GDPR, whereas in the States you have different kind of laws as well. So it's worth looking into those things. I don't think industrial animal agriculture will come for your ChatGPT logs, but it may be that depending on the situation, the police might manage to get a hold of them. So it's something to be aware of.
Also, your social media activity might also be used for AI training. I disabled that on my LinkedIn, but it's also in my Instagram. I need to figure out how to disable it. But yeah, be careful about the privacy aspect of AI.
Yeah, definitely. And so you raise a good point, particularly around things like LinkedIn, right? Because, for example, so the average person probably doesn't think that, like, why would LinkedIn collect data for AI? Like, I've never seen a LinkedIn AI thing. Like, you know what I mean? And but yeah, lots of companies are trying to integrate AI into their products. And for them to do that effectively, they need lots of their users' data. So it is really something where, like, basically, I know this is going to be tedious, but like every piece of software you use, every app, every website that you contribute, that you put, contribute data to, you should be digging through the settings just in case they are, they are using that data for the training of new AI features. I mean, this isn't something that is actually new, to be honest. So it has always been the case that a lot of these companies, websites, apps have been trying to record as much information about you as possible. In the past, they would have just sold packets of that information to data brokers, or used it for targeted advertising. But now we've got this added dimension that it might be used for building AI features as well. So it's worth looking into the privacy settings and things. It is worth noting, though, that typically, if you get there are often free versions of stuff, paid versions of stuff, and then there'll be enterprise versions of stuff, right? So you can get an enterprise version of Gemini for your company. And enterprise versions usually have the strictest privacy. So, for example, if your company gives you an email through Gmail, then Google has pledged not to use your personal emails to like create software products, and that's always been the case. And now that extends to, say, for example, Google Gemini. Whereas on the other hand, if you're using a free model or a free version of a tool, you should be very, very careful about checking the privacy policies, because as the old saying goes, if you are like, if something is free, then you are the product. That's not always true with AI, but like it may be the case that some of these tools are free because they are hoping to collect as much data from you as possible. So you could look into, is that the case? And if so, can I turn it off or find alternatives?
Yeah, thank you for including all software systems. You know, I had to do it with Copilot and Word for privacy, but also because it was slowing down the whole thing experience. So, yeah. Wonderful, Richie. I think we covered lots of ground. Did you want to add something before we stop the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to, because here we've talked about like addressing concerns. We've talked a little bit about the benefits, but I do want to like to emphasize them a little bit more. Like we've got, in terms of some case studies and things, because I really do think that the animal movement has a huge amount to gain by leaning into these tools. And I'm seeing it more. I'm seeing it more and more. So, for example, one case study I'd like to highlight is that we had there's an organization in the UK called the Conservative Animal Welfare Foundation. So they're the voice of animal welfare in the Conservative Party. And the one of the founders, Chris Platt, he's an older gentleman, but he has really leaned into AI. He was one of our most engaged participants on our Amplify for Animals course. And one thing he told me was that it's a very small org, less than 10 people. But two of his org went on maternity leave this year, right? And with an org that small, that would often mean kind of grinding to a halt, essentially, right? Or just drowning in work. But he said that because he has been making so much use of AI, he still, you know, he still waits for them to return, and he couldn't replace them with AI, but he could manage to keep kind of everything running without burning out by greatly increasing his own productivity using AI, which is amazing because this is, you know, this is a small org that is doing valuable work, and something like double maternity leave can, you know, it's just one of those things that you often can often come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden you're, you know, it's you lose the ability to kind of keep having that impact for animals. But he's managed to use AI to you know, keep the ship going and things like that, which is just really amazing to hear. And another thing as well, on the front of, we've had another organization that I do work with, Greener by Default. They help caterers to shift to more plant forward diets. And so I've been building out the data analytics side of their org, because I'm a data scientist by training. And so I've built a system that kind of mostly automates all of the data analysis that they need as an organization. And I estimate that using AI coding assistants, like programming assistants, I have been 3 to 4 times more productive this year than I was pre these assistants, right? Like in terms of the amount of code I have shipped, the amount of stuff I've delivered, like 3 to 4 times, right? It's as if, you know, it's as if there are several of me in the organization. These are the potential improvements we're talking about here. And because it's such a general purpose technology, you know, it can help you write like donor reports, it can help you research for campaigns, it can help you with your HR policies. It's such a general purpose tool that it means that there is almost every role in the whole movement can make use of AI and can see those benefits. It's not just for techies, it's not just for like young people or people in the West. It is really for all of us. And kind of to that point, I think it's just about experimenting. Really, the more you experiment with it, the more you're likely to find these benefits. So I think if we constantly experiment with these tools and we share them, we share the results with each other, we share the wins, we share the learnings, then I think as a movement, we can really catch this wave and use it to have like a huge, like a much, much bigger impact for animals.
I love that. I love hearing those stories. Thank you for sharing. And yes, please, people, follow their footsteps, become more efficient in your advocacy work by using AI. I also use AI. You know, I'm a fundraising consultant. I tell my clients, you know, your money is precious. I want to use it to be more productive and do more with what you've hired me to do. So yes, it is, like I said in the beginning, you know, it is a necessity, and people need to start learning to use it. Thank you so much, Richie. And thank you for your advocacy work. Thank you for having taken the time to answer my questions. This has been very insightful conversations. I learned a lot, and I'm sure listeners too. So we're all very grateful.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me. And to all the listeners in the new year, keep a lookout for the courses offered by Amplify for Animals. So they will be they will all be free, and there we're really hoping that we can supercharge the advocacy of, like, you know, of everyone who comes to us in the new year. So we want to help you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.